Obama warns Biden that Trump will win in 2024 if there is not a dramatic shakeup. While the Biden administration has taken steps to shield federal workers if Trump does win and attempts to downsize the federal government. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer is here on the top stories, including U.S. District Judge Anna Reyes, a Biden appointee, calling out the DOJ for its hypocrisy on the Hunter Biden House subpoenas versus the imprisonment of Peter Navarro for his subpoena. And also pressure on Israel and Netanyahu for a six-week ceasefire as the war continues. IQ Al Razuli joins the conversation, and also on reports that the former Defense Secretary Mark Esper predicts Iran will strike at Israel. And finally, Biden's Trans Day of Visibility proclamation has stirred the hornet's nest on the social reengineering of America. Patricia Antone, George McClellan, and Michael McCarthy bring a terrific analysis to a roundtable discussion. Viewpoint this Sunday is next.
Time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit, and bring forth real talk from real people about real news, providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation, all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to the Weekend News Magazine. Viewpoint This Sunday. It is Malcolm All Out here. I've got a lot of program today, my fellow Americans. Thank you for joining us here on the broadcast. And we're going to get into up front a lot of politics, a lot of election material. We're going to talk about the Middle East, pressure being put on Netanyahu. And then the cultural shift. I've got a phenomenal roundtable coming up a little bit later on this cultural shift, the Trans Day, and all the things that are transpiring there, and really have some honest conversation about what's transpiring in our nation. So let's get started here, and I want to bring on first up front here, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins me, and Tony is president of Project Sentinel, a CIA trained intelligence operations officer. And more than that, Tony is, I think, in my opinion, is one of the best political voices out there because he is always able to size things up and give you an honest analysis back here. Tony, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hey, Malcolm, always great to join you. Thanks for having me.
I've seen multiple reports here about that, and you've seen them, I'm sure. Obama has been concerned, warning Biden now multiple times that Trump will win in 2024 if there isn't a dramatic shakeup. And this started actually in 23, some of these reports.
Right.
And that he's concerned. And that, and as I quote here, a report, as former President Donald Trump is in a stronger position to win the White House than he was in the two previous cycles. Time magazine reported that Obama paid Biden a visit in June and delivered the warning and did so again in December, just a couple of months ago, when he didn't see the Biden campaign operation improve. So just let's start there. Do you think they're a little nervous with things?
Well, I think they are, Malcolm, for a couple of reasons. First, their traditional groups that they look to as for coalitions are kind of fraying. You've got the traditional liberals, Bill Maher, semi-Jewish liberals who were kind of unhappy with the fact that you have the party itself siding with Hamas and radical Islam. So, and you've got the radical Islam element. So it's, and then, oh, by the way, the minorities, which they normally look to, the Hispanics and blacks, aren't doing well economically, and they know it. So it's all the groups that they require to cobble together a coalition to achieve victory. It just ain't there. And I think Obama, as much as anything, he's trying to say it's Biden's fault. It's really not. It's the party's fault. The party, Democrat Party, for decades now, Malcolm, has been grifting. They've been using government funds off the New Green scam or sham or grift, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. That's how they fund a lot of their activities. And these other groups have been held together by essentially a form of bribery. They've been bribed by the Democrat Party to stay in the coalition. They don't ever prosper because they're always told that, you know, oh, you can't do it without us. So I think everybody's just fed up to the point of where it doesn't really matter because nobody's benefiting from the way the Democrats are doing it. So I think Obama's sounding alarm based on his own inept policies. But Biden is going to be the fall guy because Biden's the guy in charge right now.
Right, right. Now, when you see the polls right now, Tony, and you see what's happening, not only in the regular polls, but the swing states, all of those, right. And you see what's happening there. So let me ask you something I've been thinking about last many days here. Is there a concern or do you have a concern at all that the Trump movement is peaking too early?
No, I don't. I think the Trump movement has been very consistent in drawing people out. I mean, people are fed up, Malcolm. So I don't think it's early at all. I think, if anything, it's sending a message to the left who are continuing engaging in lawfare. Basically, all these lawsuits against President Trump are insane. And I think people showing up and continuing to show that no matter how many, you know, indictments or trials that Trump has to go to, they don't care. And by the way, I think that's the right answer. So no, I think it's fine. I think that you're going to see in the autumn, once Trump is the nominee and everything is going, you're going to see even larger rallies. Right now, for example, Malcolm, you know, Biden made a big deal about the $25 million. Ooh, that he and Bill Clinton and Obama get. Well, Trump's going to do something like $50 million this week. So it's kind of like the more Trump reinforces the dominance on the political landscape, the more desperate the other side's going to become. I think it's going to make the Democrats overplay their hand, to be honest with you. Our side of Congress even allows the left to get all these dollars to be used in pet projects, because I'm telling you right now, the sea ain't going to rise. The climate ain't going to cook. It's all a fiction, and yet we go along with it. So it's just atrocious.
Right, right. But we are going to have an eclipse, Tony.
Yeah, that's right. And they're going to try to capitalize on that. I'm sure they'll have some fun to stop gays and trans from being affected by seeing the eclipse in some way. You know?
Well, yeah. And we'll talk more about that, the movement, later in the broadcast. But all right, let me ask you this now. I see, again, multiple reports on this, but this particular one I'm going to reference was actually in Rolling Stone, and that kind of tells you there. Yeah. But the headline on this is Biden is building a superstructure to stop Trump from stealing the election. You almost do a double. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You almost do a double, triple take on these. Yeah. There's been a series of reports like this that they're going to steal the election. And that it says for years, Donald Trump has made it abundantly clear that if he doesn't win the 2024 presidential election, he's willing to cheat and steal it. Can't make that stuff up. What do you think of that?
Well, it's lawfare. Again, it's another form of it. At this point, I think they are worried. They, the Democrats, are worried, and I'll just be blunt, that their cheating that they did last round in 2020 will not be sufficiently large to overcome what I believe is going to be a huge landslide.
Pretty well declarative to say that the Biden administration is aware of this. They are now taking steps, and you've seen this, I'm sure, to protect the federal workers. You've been seeing these reports now?
Yeah.
They're gonna, because they're worried about a Trump purge. Trump has come out and said he's going to change the landscape in federal workers. And this gets a little interesting here. And what steps they're taking, because this stuff's going to get, I think you pretty well know already, it's going to get tied up into the courts. And a lot of this happened back in 2020, where he issued an executive order known as Schedule F, which would have reclassified tens of thousands of federal workers, because these cats get protections like nobody's business. What do you think about this fight? Because we're talking about the deep state establishment. We're talking about trying to limit the size of government. But the left doesn't want that, Tony, and you're taking steps right now to prevent that. Who wins this one? How does this come out?
Well, okay, this is a great question. I've got this question from several folks lately, both on and off air. So what they're trying to do, Malcolm, is basically protect the federal government and the left policies from Trump. That is to say, they're trying to basically I don't even know what the right word is, like, you have child safety stuff. Well, they're trying to make the federal government safe from Trump. It's like, oh, we don't want him to get in there and start making changes. And I'll say this, it's stupid. This is their coping mechanism, Malcolm. I'll say this and be very clear. The Trump administration, if it comes in, should it come in, has two competing groups looking at policies and personnel who would have to come in with Trump and change things. And I can tell you, no matter how much coping the left tries to do right now to embed people in the federal government and protect civil service workers and take appointees and turn them into career civil servants, it ain't going to work. It ain't going to work, because what's going to happen is Trump and the team are going to roll in and just start dismantling everything they've done. And oh, by the way, in the process of doing that, Trump can turn back money to Congress. Like, yeah, we don't want this money. One of the things I've recommended to the team is defund everything. I mean, think about this, Malcolm. The federal government is rich because the Congress continues to give 7% per year more to every budget for no reason. And so you defund these bureaucrats, they can't do anything. And this is one of the things I argued with the Trump team before. It's like, just say no. Don't fund the bureaucracy. The bureaucracy is not your friend. So whatever they're doing now, Malcolm, good luck, because it can be defunded instantly. And that's
wondering. That's what so you believe that a lot of that stuff can be undone fairly aggressively. You're saying
easily. Again, okay. No money, no activity. It's that simple.
Well, frankly, I was thinking about it this past week, Tony. I was thinking, as I read all these reports, I was thinking, but wait a minute, if they can do all this, why can't it be undone? Of course it can, right?
Of course. Yes. Like I said, it's cope. It's their coping with what I think is clearly coming.
Right. Okay. All right. This next one is so rich. I only spend a couple of moments on it, but I can't not go here. And this first report is Politico reports this. The headline on this, Tony, are you kidding me? The Biden appointed judge tortures the DOJ for blowing off Hunter Biden related subpoenas from the House GOP. Can't make this one up at all. So we're talking about U.S. District Judge Ana Reyes, you know who I'm speaking about here.
Yeah,
she's the federal judge that tortured the Justice Department. This just happened on Friday, by the way. And she was unbelievable what she had to say. And she, by the way, is a Biden appointee on the federal district court. I want to remind everybody. And she says, she goes on and she says, there's a person in jail right now, and this one really irritated me because I've been following this with Peter Navarro. She says, there's a person in jail right now because you all bought a criminal lawsuit against him because he did not appear for a House subpoena.
Right.
She said, which is factual. This is BS. Right. She says, I think it's quite rich that you guys pursue criminal investigations and put people in jail for not showing up and then direct current executive branch employees to take the same approach. She said, you are making a bunch of arguments that you would never accept from any other litigant. What do you say to this story? Incredible.
Well, it's about time. It's long overdue. I see this all the time. I see Abby Lowe, the attorney and the sugar brother, the sugar bro. No way. That guy, that sugar bro guy, I don't remember his name, but he's been paying off all this money. Gee, Malcolm, isn't that income? If somebody pays off something for you, isn't that still income you owe tax on? I mean, am I missing something here? I mean, Hunter Biden, is getting all sorts of deference. And thank goodness this judge has said, you know, this is enough. Enough's enough. And I'm sorry. I'm just going to, you know, go with the fact that Hunter should be in jail and Joe Biden should be, you know, right behind him, because they've engaged in pay to play for at least the last 10 years for a lot of money. This isn't like buying someone dinner at Ruth's Chris. This is heavy duty money going to the interest of every member of the family. It's bribery. Yeah. Spiro Agnew was convicted for far less back when he was president under Nixon. So,
I remember. Yeah. You know, I really need to just give real praise here to the U.S. District Judge Ana Reyes, who I got to tell you here, man. She, just in this one movement in this story, has renewed my faith a little bit, at least, that maybe justice is still there somewhat when you have a Biden appointee say the truth. You don't see this a lot today, Tony.
You don't see this a lot.
Where they step out like this. So I really honor this judge today. In fact, I dedicate today's program all to this judge. I'm very serious. I mean, you know, and I was sick to my stomach a couple weeks back when I seen how they were torturing Peter Navarro. I really was ill over it because You see how many people get off on this stuff all over the place. And here's a guy, they always go and they pin them to the walls. Anybody who's associated to Trump, they nail them. Sick.
Right.
That's no form of justice. That's a third world banana republic rat hole. It's what that is.
Yeah.
All right, Tony, stay right there a moment. I want to bring on another voice right now, and then I want to come back to you and get some opinions on this.
Sure.
And okay, so joining me now, we'll talk about some foreign policy. Wow, this rift now with Netanyahu and Biden is really something else. We've been watching this for a while here. But IQ Al Razuli joins me now. IQ is an expert in this field, to be sure. He's an Iraqi exile, was born in Baghdad, actually. Arabic speaker, scholar, author, analyst who follows all these details, man. He has been warning the world for some time about the dangers of this. The Hill, the headline in The Hill, IQ, says Joe Biden in a bind on Israel as U.S. escalates pressure on Netanyahu. And of course, they say that this was because of the killing of the, you know, the international aid workers. Not that the U.S. would ever do anything like that. We've never, like, hence Afghanistan or anywhere else. We've never done anything like that, of course. But giving them hell. But now the pressure is being put on Netanyahu to do a ceasefire. They're asking for 6 weeks. My God, they could build another empire over there in 6 weeks. And asking for a six-week ceasefire. They're squeezing Netanyahu for all it's worth. Let's get to the point of what this story means. Will Netanyahu succumb to this? Can he? Will he? Does what happens? Obviously, Biden's threatening to pull all their funds back. IQ, what do you think?
From the point of view of Israel, all these demonstrations and all these accusations, not a single one of them is linking it to the release, immediate release of every single hostage. Unless this is done, but Netanyahu must not touch anything. He should continue with his attack in Gaza.
But what if the U.S. pulls? Now, what if he's threatening to stop U.S. Money, dollars, and weapons?
Let him. Then we go to World War III. Let him. I've been warning you, not you personally. I've been warning Americans in my talk shows. We will have World War III if Israel's existence is in danger. Mm-hmm. It's not complicated. Mm-hmm. They have the Samson option. They have had it since 1956. Mm-hmm. If we go down, everybody around us will go down. Yeah. Not complicated.
Interesting.
Don't take my word for it. Just look at it realistically. Mm-hmm. There is no way on earth Israel will allow itself to be annihilated. Forget it. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. Now, well, there's a lot of other things playing out here on the battlefield. And by the way, in regards to those hostages, let me touch on that a moment with you, IQ. According to the numbers I see, Israeli numbers, actually, IQ, 253 people were taken hostage on October 7th, okay? Of these, 109 have been released as part of this prisoner exchange. And of course, Israel has let go huge sums of criminals to get those out. Three have been rescued directly by the Israeli army and military operations. And I've seen that. The bodies of 12 hostages have been recovered, including three that the IDF admitted to killing in one of the operations. Of the remaining 129 hostages, IQ, Israel says at least 34 are dead, minimum. So that leaves about 90-something left, supposedly, that they have. You have that situation of the hostages. You know, war's ugly business. We've talked about this many times, IQ. But you have Gaza that has been, more than 56, almost 60% of buildings in Gaza have been seriously damaged and destroyed. So it's a war zone. The whole thing's a war zone. So this battle for the hostages, I mean, in on one side of the scale, IQ, versus Israel's survival and existence on the other side of the scale here, how do you weigh those two?
I promise you, if you listen to my talk shows and my articles, just literally after the day of the attack, I said the hostages must not be taken into account as a collateral. That Hamas must never be allowed to dictate the release of 250 people regarding the survival of 7 or 8 million Israelis. I said that from the very beginning. They are collateral damage. I'm not saying it because I'm heartless. I'm saying it because it's reality. No other nation on earth who has been attacked the way Israel has been attacked without bombarding the enemy indiscriminately into oblivion. Look what the Americans and the British did in Germany. They literally targeted civilians. In Tokyo, over 100,000 were incinerated. In Dresden, about 30,000 were incinerated. I'm not attacking them. I agree with them 100%. Somebody goes to war intentionally, aggressive war, you have to know that your civilians also will have to suffer. Simple, not complicated.
Yeah.
Hamas attacked civilians to destroy them, to destroy Israel. The Gaza people are all Hamas people. You know, when Tony said radical Muslims, the word radical does not exist in Islam. Only Sharia-compliant Muslims are Muslims. No other sect and no other deviation from Islam is allowed. Only Sharia-compliant. What does Sharia-compliant mean? Fundamentalist. What does that mean? ISIS, Boko Haram, Hamas, Al-Qaeda. These are the real Muslims. Yeah. These are the true Muslims. Why? They follow the Quran literally, without objection, without prevarication. The Quran tells them every Muslim, every Sharia-compliant Muslim is the eternal and mortal enemy of every human being.
Well, let me ask you this. The fact that our government references, and a lot of people actually in positions of power, IQ, reference them as radical, and is the juxtaposition of that, I see on the other side of this, is that for decades now, they've been selling Islam as a religion of peace. Is that the argument which you just pointed out, right?
There is no such thing as peace in Islam. Every single verse of the Quran, don't take my word for it. Mm-hmm. I'm not propagandizing.
Right.
All you have to do, free of charge, Google Quran. Read chapters 2 to chapter 9. There are 114 chapters. Mm-hmm. Don't bother. Chapter 2 to chapter 9 will turn your hair white. It's full of hate. There is no love in the Quran. There is no love between humans and Allah, or Allah and the humans, or humans against other humans. 1400 years ago, Muhammad declared total war between Islam, Dar al-Islam, against Dar al-Harb. Do you know what Dar al-Harb means? The territory of war. That means every country on earth which is not Islamic is to be justifiably attacked by Muslims.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't take my word for it.
Well,
double check me, and I'll tell you, no human being on planet Earth, I know it sounds ridiculous, but it's true, no human being on planet Earth and no intelligent life outside the solar system can debate me this subject and wins a single argument.
Okay, all right, stay right there. I want to get Tony back in here. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer still here with us. And Tony, this pressure campaign being put on Netanyahu and then Biden, knowing how our political operation works here, how is this going to end? Right now with, I mean, Netanyahu has said very declaratively he's not letting go until he gets rid of them. And it's all funny talk as far as I can see, because there's still some battalions left there of the Hamas. They're saying on one edge of their mouth, yeah, go ahead, you got to kill them all. Yeah. But then they don't want them to go into Rafah. They don't want them to do other things. They don't want them. They want them to do a ceasefire. You can't have the end result to be victorious when you cut them off at the knees like they're doing here. What do you say to this?
No, this is all about domestic politics. It has nothing to do with the Israelis. This is about the Democrat Party has been successful in cobbling together coalitions which often have very different political conflicts, but they're smoothed over or ignored. And this is the case here. You've had the Democrat Party nuzzling up to Islam and being all Sharia compliant. As IQ says, you know, the Democrats have just, you know, and by the way, I don't know how to make this point any clearer than just saying it. The people who would be most readily killed by Islam, by those who are devoted to Sharia law, are the political left, the lesbians and transgenders. Every time I see a transgender flag supporting Palestinians, I laugh because, like, you'd be the first ones they'd kill. That's what I'm talking about. This coalition is so fragile. And so what you see here is a desperate attempt by the Biden administration to make nice and to pretend, oh, yeah, we really care about Hamas and the Palestinian people, and oh yeah, Netanyahu, you got to back off. So this is what's going to happen. The Netanyahu and the Israelis are going to go in and win, period. That's all they're going to do it, no matter what.
Okay.
And they're going to ignore Biden, and Biden, I think, is going to suffer the consequences, because the other thing they're ignoring are the large Jewish donors. Large Jewish donors right now are getting fed up,
right.
And some of them are very vocal about this, too. I mean, I don't want to mention by name, but there's a prominent lawyer on the left who has been saying, I can no longer support the party. And he's voted for Democrats his entire life. So I think that's where this is all going.
You know, we questioned that so many times over the years, Tony, why these powerful Jewish leaders support the Democrat Party when they don't support the Jewish people, really and truly.
Right.
And this is the one event that could change all of that, finally. Maybe that's the bright silver lining on this thing, if anything, you know, and pull them out of the Marxist left camp, maybe, huh? That could be, right?
I would hope. I mean, I don't know what's going to take.
That's what I'm saying.
Jewish friends this question over and over.
So I don't
get how is it you guys support
a
political party that's out to destroy you? That they're fundamentally they're anti-Semitic. It's like, how do you get this?
It doesn't make any sense, Tony. I never could understand it. The logic in it it escapes my mind here. I got to ask you this here. I know we're tight on time here, but I got to ask you here. Iran has now come out in the last few days here, and they're vowing revenge after Israel, after the targeting of the military commander in Syria. We're seeing some reports of that. But now, the a former defense secretary, you know who I'm speaking about, Mark Esper, Tony, said Iran will feel a need to retaliate against Israel. These comments came out on Friday. He predicted Iran will take action against Israel, but on a limited scale to avoid a wider scale war in the Middle East. He said they're going to act. What do you say about that?
No, I think everybody thinks they're going to act, but I agree with I don't like Esper. I think Esper was fired for the right reasons by President Trump. With that said, he's correct on this. I think there's going to be a strike on some Israeli interests, not in Israel, because an actual attack in Israel would ratchet this up. And I don't think the Iranians want that. So this would be probably an attack on an embassy, consulate, or some other Israeli activity, maybe a business or a company somewhere in a third country. But it's I think it's very likely you're going to hear something by Monday.
Yeah, I was curious to see what you thought of that. IQ, you have a difference of thought on that, sir, that story?
Yes. I'll tell you why. Iran cannot, the Ayatollahs at this moment of time in their life, cannot afford to go to total war with Israel, because the 50% of the population is under the age of 45. They hate the mullahs, they hate the regime, and they hate Islam.
Well, they're not talking about a full-out war here, though, IQ. They're talking about a couple of pinpricks to piss them off, no?
Yeah, but it depends on which pinpricks. If you attack, for example, the nuclear reactor in Dimona, that's not a pinprick.
I don't know, man.
It all depends. All I'm saying is they are not in this state of good condition, political, to go to a major war.
IQ, last couple of moments here. The BBC had a report 6 months on how close is Israel to eliminating Hamas. And there are multiple reports. They never do give the answer in that piece with that misleading headline. All right. So it's 6 months on. How close is Israel to fully eliminating Hamas, in your opinion?
You cannot eliminate Hamas. I told you before, with all your respect. Hamas is an idea. Hamas is Islam. Every single nation on earth, which is Islamic.
All right, so how about Hamas in Gaza? Let's rephrase the question. How close?
It will take another year.
Another year? Jeez Louise.
You see, you don't understand. Sorry, with all due respect, I'm not saying you don't understand. They are being pummeled by the left, by the right, by everybody, not to continue the war. Yeah. Had they been allowed to continue the war, they would have finished them 6 months ago.
Yeah.
But they're not allowed.
Well, you said that from the beginning, actually. You said they were going to stop them. They would never be able to finish the job. But Tony, you were just saying you believe they will. You see the commitment on Netanyahu. You think they will get close to finishing this job in Gaza, at least. I mean, we understand Hamas.
Well, I agree with that, Q, that they would have been done already if it wasn't for the meddling of the United Nations and the United States. With that said, I think the Netanyahu did try to make nice with Biden. I think they did their best to say, look, I've been on other interviews on other stations with members of the Israeli defense. I mean, their spokesmen, they've been very, you know, I've been very pointed. They've been very polite. Mm-hmm. I think they've been very polite because they've been trying to make nice with the Biden administration. And I don't think it's going to work. I think they've recognized that now. And I think they recognize they just have to go win this. I think the time frame is a little bit different. I think they'll be done by June. I think the issue becomes what happens after they eliminate Hamas. Who then takes charge and governs
Gaza?
You know, I think it's going to be the Israelis. I think they're going to have to take it on for themselves.
I've been wondering that, what you just said. I don't see another alternative either. I mean, you can't let the devil back in there, can you?
No.
I mean, that's exactly it. IQ, you disagree with that or agree real fast?
No, I agree with him 100%.
Okay. All right. Cool.
As long as they give Israel the chance, she will do the job.
Yeah.
Right. Amen. Let me tell folks now, IQ, you, as folks listen to this on Sunday here, there's an article on Sunday you will want to go read. Put a lot of thought into it, IQ. It's entitled "European and American Laws Can Stop the Spread of Islamic Terrorism." And IQ lays out all the steps involved, of the steps that he would take, that need to be taken worldwide, to be able to stop this spread of Islamic terrorism, which he believes is the greatest threat to humanity, period. End stop right there. IQ, 30 seconds. What's the summary of that article you want people to know?
Very simple. Islam says that Allah is the same as the God of the Bible. I can prove, based on the Quran, that is the fallacy. Islam is not a religion. It's a cult belief system, the cult of Muhammad. 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Okay. You got it, brother. I always love your directness and honesty here. Tremendous opening to the program. I could stay hours with these two guys. I have to tell you, I have such great respect for both here. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. Now you see, when I started, Francis, I said one of the best political voices in the country. And I mean that. He is one of the best. I love talking to Tony. And IQ Al Razuli is just so knowledgeable about this story. There's nobody like him out there. We're privileged to have him part of our America Out Loud network here for sure. Okay, friends, we got to move the program along right now. And we're going to take a pause here. We'll come back. We got a dynamic roundtable coming up here. And brace yourself. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Take action today. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Don't accept joint aches and stiffness as part of aging. Doctors at Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexibility. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a gel you swallow. Get 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com. Code out loud.
Millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of the toxic spike protein. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed their spike support formula to counteract harmful spike protein from COVID-19 and vaccines so you can feel your best. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
Many voices, one freedom, united in the First Amendment. Our goal is to herald the voice of genuine liberty at AmericaOutloud.news, a place where you'll find the naked truth expressed with a patriotic heart. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio, liberty and justice for all. Welcome back to Viewpoint this Sunday. It is Malcolm Out Loud here, and let me tell you right now the roundtable I have here, and we'll move right into the conversation here. Patricia Antone will join us right at the top here. She's an author, activist, a constitutional conservative, and uses the Constitution in ways that some don't when she looks at what's going on in our nation. George McClellan is here, and George is just a terrific voice. He's a historian. He's a political analyst. Spent 43 years in law enforcement in the U.S. Naval Investigative Services, and he is a treasure. Michael McCarthy is here as well, and he had talked about treasure. He's a student of the free market economics, and he has been talking about this big government apparatus for some time. He's a very successful author. He's got some very interesting prophetic novels out there you'll find in the America Out Loud bookstore. So, Patricia, I want to start with you on this. You've each been very outspoken about this topic, and you've each written some pretty big stories about this, some articles on this. And yours was Biden's promotion of transgenderism weaponizes mental illness. But you talk about this fact that appending trans to the grown alphabet sex people, their mantra there, achieves the purpose brilliantly. And this is about this collection of people that really gets into re-engineering our society, if you will. Tell us about what you're seeing and why this is so wrong with what the Biden administration is doing here with Trans Day.
Yeah, the promotion of it is the promotion of and rather than use the left's terms, there is no such thing as a transgender. It's not possible. No human being has ever transitioned from male to female. So what we need to be doing is talking about what it really is, and it's body-mind conflict. And they are promoting a condition of body-mind conflict, particularly among our kids. And the reason they're doing that is that not only if we create of this mental illness a political constituency, you know, a political subdivision, as it will, then what we're doing is we're saying, okay, we need another victim class that needs to be pandered to and that needs to be protected with special protections. Every time that happens, every time we add to the special protected classes, what are we doing? We're empowering government against the people. That's what we're doing. We're empowering government to engineer. Well, the trans thing goes it one better by undermining ancient societal constructs. So everything that accommodates the physiological reality of male and female in our society is subject now to question and to attack on the basis of this ideology. So it not only adds to the political power because they use special interests as political power generators, but it also accelerates the degradation of society by dismantling all the constructs that accommodate male and female.
One of the points you made that got my attention, Patricia, is you reminded Americans that not too long ago, this was considered really a mental illness of sorts. So what changed that changed all that?
Well, it still is a mental illness. You'll still find it in the DSM. So it gender dysphoria is considered a mental illness, and you'll still find it there in the DSM. But what changed is that they decided to create a political constituency because there's great political power to be had in doing so, not because there's a ginormous number of people that suffer gender dysphoria, but because you can do precisely what we've watched them do, which is divide society and attack every construct that accommodates male and female. They want us to question whether or not male-female even exists anymore.
Let me bring in George McClellan to the conversation. His column on this, his article was The Sick and Perverted Remaking of America. George, you make a statement, and this really gets under the skin of a lot of people. A lot of people do not talk out about this topic. In fact, the fact that we're having a conversation here in a roundtable, we would be really looked at badly from a lot of people. And you make the statement, they claim anyone who believes that their rights come from God and not from the state or white Christian nationalists. Now, that gets me to a bigger point here. They always, like when you question any of this, as Patricia was just doing, it becomes a phobia, transphobia. They'll call you a white supremacist. They'll call you a racist. They'll say you have a transphobia. You have issues. They turn the tables onto you, onto us, onto this conversation to say, well, we're the ones that have the problem, not these other people, because they're kind of normal. So they've sort of made this whole thing very normal, or try to. Is that talk about that? And that seems to be the objective, I guess. And they talk down to anybody who goes against their arguments, George.
Well, they do it all the time on every subject that doesn't agree with their philosophy. Their philosophy is to eliminate the America we know and change it into something else. And this is just another gimmick to do that. I don't care that they call me transphobic. Why? Because I'm transphobic. You know, those people can go to the closet and do their little silly thing, or they can have their little stages, not in front of children, but read their poetry or whatever they're going to do. Just don't make me approve of it. You know, they can pretend that they're something they're not. The government or no one else can make me pretend that I believe it. Trans,
See,
what the
that's the
hell?
crux of the argument right there, George. You're exactly right. And but yet they want to force that on to unsuspecting people to believe this behavior is quite normal.
Well, we're not unsuspecting anymore, are we? Yeah, we're not. You know, we see these people walking down the street in their silly little clothes, dressed like clowns, and displaying their stuff, as it were. And they're protected by the Democrat law because they have co-opted who is normal and who isn't. So, you know, that even extends to their white Christian supremacy type of thing. Anything that shines the truth on them has to be destroyed or put down or censored or quit or locked up. But not their sickos. Look at our streets. Our streets are filled with people who have no compunction at all of killing other people. They're not from here. They're not Americans. They did not have a grow up in a Christian faith. Yet they are protected by the state. The state, the biggest threat to America is the Democrat Party.
You know, George, you say interesting. We must realize that there is very clearly an all-out fight coming against Democrat totalitarians who hate America, hate God, hate humanity, hate moral ethics, and hate that we have God-given freedoms. That is one brazen statement right there. It seems to me, and you talk a bit in your piece about Marxism, and several of these stories do actually. Is this the full onset of that of Marxism in our name? I mean, I remember years ago, George, we talked about socialism. It was, just a light case of socialism. And then some of the people started replacing that with the word communism and then Marxism. And is this the full onset of this disease that we're experiencing? Is this the end? Is this whole argument we're having now? Is this kind of the onset and the entree to this sort of a debate and conversation in the country?
The fight is coming. Why? Because we can't continue to let these people change our lives because some government has a FBI or law enforcement out there to make us obey. Americans are fighters, and I think the fight is coming. I mean, they're not going to just quit and give up and say, "All right, you're right. We have no moral ethics, and you're correct." But we have got to protect ourselves. And if the government cannot protect us, but protect them instead and change the definition of what needs to be protected because they have lost the moral code of Judeo-Christian religion and the teachings that made America, then we're lost. And I'm not going to be lost. I'm willing to stand up for what I believe.
Michael McCarthy, his piece on this. Mike, you got into a whole different element of this, and you talked about sacrificing children, really. I mean, you got right into the core of it and talking about the rainbow God transgender.
Well, it's mutilation, and I use the example of the ancient Carthaginians throwing infant babies in the burning fire of the altar of the god Moloch. Well, we're doing something in it even worse. We're mutilating children who don't know any better. Trans is a teenage fad. teenagers long for attention, and when they quickly learn that, oh, my teachers and school counselors will give me lots of attention if I think, maybe I'm the wrong sex, and then they get all this attention, and then these counselors blackmail the parents by saying, oh, your child will commit suicide if you don't do this surgery. Well, it's all BS. They show, a lot of children commit suicide, but all these recent Scandinavian studies have shown that it's really attributable to an underlying psychiatric problems such as depression and anxiety. Well, guess what? Teenagers are prone to depression and anxiety. I remember talking to a social worker once about a teenage girl, and she used all these big psychiatric words like bipolar and this and that. And I said, wait a minute, I know this girl. She's moody. Well, guess what? It's the job of teenage girls to be moody. That's normal. Mm-hmm. So who benefits from all this transgender surgery? The doctors and the hospitals are making money.
By putting this all out into the public square in the way that they are, I'm thinking that it's become more commonplace now. What I'm guessing, Mike, is that more young people, to your point of even suicide and things of this nature, more of them are succumbing to the pressure, and they're wanting to have this change or these operations, or they think it looks cool or it's a fad or something. And of course, their brains are not even fully developed at that age, but the system, the schools and the educators, they're going with workarounds to not even inform the parents. And they're doing things that they shouldn't be doing. Are more people jumping on the trans and the gay train because it's put out there in the way that it is now?
Yeah, well, it's socially acceptable. If you want to be, if you want to score points with your liberal Marxist friends, as George talked about, do you say, well, I've got a transgender child or whatever, or I took my child in for the surgery or whatever? Well, that makes you a hero to the left. Well, it's all BS. The real threat of the suicide is due to these underlying things. And guess what? Scientists know that correlation is not causation. I mean, I could say the sky is blue today and there was a bank robbery. So does blue sky cause bank robbery? There's a correlation, but that doesn't mean the one thing causes the other. These children are simply responding to the trendiness and the fattiness. Exactly. That I can get a lot of attention from adults and my peer group if I claim pronouns and cross-dressing and all this other stuff. And it puts the child in control. The child can now make demands to the parents. And if the parents don't go along with it, guess what? Yeah. Social services can come in and kidnap your child and say, well, that's child abuse.
Well, that's happening, Mike. What you just said has been happening now.
Exactly.
There have been parents who have been losing the children because they're not succumbing to that pressure, to what you say.
Exactly. And to George's point, it's destroying the family unit.
How much is too much? George talked about that there's going to be the societal rejection of this. Yeah. How close are we to that tipping point, do you honestly believe, Mike?
I think, as George points out, we're getting closer and closer to it, because when people wake up to the fact that this is mutilation, I mean, if I said to you, as Bill Mayer said, I've got a child who's 10 years old who wants to play pirate, so let's cut his eye out and give him an eye patch. Let's cut his leg off and give him a peg leg.
Wow.
People would say, that's savage. That's awful. That's terrible. And yet they give a pass to people cutting off breasts and cutting off sexual organs, which is mutilation, plain and simple, under the supposed compassion of, we're helping the child realize their true sex.
Wow.
I think more people are waking up to that.
Mike, that's a brilliant analysis, I have to tell you. I was just thinking about us playing cowboys and Indians as kids outside. And imagine if that all became real life. You talk about Peg Leg Pete there and what that's all. Wow. Let's get back over to Patricia here. That is an interesting analysis where he says they've taken this imaginary world, Patricia, to a whole new level, which is kind of where we started the conversation, in the mental illness capacity that it is. Let's touch on that. Is it always mental illness, or to the point where Mike had said moments ago, kids will be kids. They have these kinds of things. I mean, it's an uncertain time of our lives. Is it always mental illness, or sometimes it's just people having fun or thinking that, you know, whatever?
We used to have a thing called a tomboy.
That's right.
And I remember as a child, I liked to climb trees and I liked to play army with my brothers and I liked to go fishing and so forth like this. And thank God my parents lived in a sane age when it wasn't. When we're children, we go through a lot of different things. So, you know, for people to start calling children trans is just horrible. It basically makes it impossible for a child to give normal expression to normal things without great danger. But what I wanted to mention here is that this bit with the Democrats and the leftists basically moving in this direction, I don't think they can stop. And the reason they can't stop is that factional grievance is their power generator. They don't have policy to which they can point, right? So the way they generate political power is through factional grievance, and it's become almost an exclusive strategy for generating political power.
But the reason they can't stop, I agree with everything you said, but I'll go one more step. And the reason they can't stop now is because they've normalized it all, Patricia. I mean, they can't go back on all that now. I mean, it's not going to work.
And they can't normalize it. The truth is they can't normalize it. Human nature will be what it is. And the created nature of human physiology will be what it is.
Well, they've done a pretty good job of trying to normalize it, though. I would almost push back a little bit, saying, no, it's become fairly normal now. And in fact, you would be ridiculed if people hear this broadcast that have a different viewpoint. They would call you all kinds of names, Patricia.
And that's fine. I will wear those labels like an honor. one of the things that they've done with this Frankensex industry, they've established basically a multi-billion-dollar multinational industry in Frankensex procedures. And the purpose of that is not just to make a lot of money. The purpose of that is to guarantee that there's a money-motivated political defense.
It's to transform society, for sure. I mean, they're doing that. And the victim class.
They want to make sure that there's plenty of money behind the political wind in favor of.
And you always talk about the victim class, and that's been their mantra right along here. Are we at the tipping point, Patricia, yes or no?
Yes, I think we are. We have to choose. This is a time for choosing.
Time for choosing. And so you do think we are there. George, in all your years and seeing things, the way we've seen the shift in society, I noticed from knowing you for many years now, and you've been writing from the beginning of America Out Loud, and we just come up on 8 years here, by the way, this past week. Have a sense of these kinds of societal shifts we're seeing here. You almost can't believe this stuff anymore. You almost have to pinch yourself to think we're really having these conversations anymore here. These are all distractions. We're not really talking about the real problems anymore. We're talking about distractions. But as there really is a move to being a Marxist nation, we are moving to a form of communism we've never seen before. Is that accurate?
Yes. And we don't recognize the dangers coming. For one thing, people out here who are offended by this transgender being pushed into their schools, into their churches, into their parades, offended by that, they will arrive at a point one day where one or two guys will say, I've had enough of this, and take some kinetic action to stop it, at least in their town.
Wow.
We're not organized. Those people would be, within a day or two, would be swarmed by federal government, hauled off to prison and jails, and we would never see them again. And that message is more important to everybody else in America who is not organized to take action. Mm-hmm. So we need Donald Trump and a conservative Congress to change the rules. And eliminate the danger from such organizations as the FBI and ATF and those agencies that are doing what they're told to do in the name of transgenderism.
Right.
Yes, if they succeed, you know, FEMA built a lot of camps and have thousands and thousands of house trailers that they have stored around America in places that could be very quickly made into concentration camps. They were designed publicly to house people who's lost their home because of a hurricane or an earthquake or terrible fires.
Right.
Well, those don't happen enough to fill up these trailers. They happen, they take the trailers to the where the typhoon, the hurricane hit. But they're there, and they're ready to accept prisoners.
How about we use those to lock up Congress, George?
Who's going to do it?
Exactly.
We got to be practical here.
Yeah,
who's going to do it?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, that is the argument I consistently hear here. Last word, Michael, on the last point here, and that is this: we talked about the tipping point. All this happened, and parents are pushing back. I've seen a lot of stories and reading up on this topic. They are pushing back. A lot of people have had enough. And so maybe this is progress of some sort. Hard to think this would ever go back into, as we call it, the closet or more in a private setting. I don't know where the rub on this is and that all out fight that George talks about that is coming. Huh?
Well, I think the fight comes through school board meetings. As long as the FBI doesn't lock us up, those of us who step up to speak at school board meetings.
Back into the concentration camps,
speech,
right?
That is, into George's camps that he talks about.
Yeah.
But I think as the parents speak up to say, no, you do not own my child. Me sending a child to school doesn't mean I give up ownership and protection of my child. I'm the one who decides, and I will protect my child. And this stuff is, as Tricia points out, is a fad. It's not a mental illness. It's just that it gets so much attention that the child realizes that they can get what they want. Now, once upon a time, I worked with a foundation that worked with emotionally disturbed children. And the definition was these were juvenile delinquents. They got arrested and they were given a chance or a choice of go to the juvenile lockup or you can go to this camp. Well, I was part of the camp. And I remember some of the teenage girls say, once they got to trust us, they said, you know what? When we got arrested, we would always talk crazy. I said, oh, why is that? She said, well, if you don't talk crazy, they send you to juvenile jail, which is pretty harsh. But if you talk crazy, they send you to the mental hospital, which has better food and they have pool tables and let you play pool. They know what they're doing.
You just described the future political class. Those people are now running our government, Michael.
absolutely.
That may explain a whole lot there. Thank you, Mike. That's a wrap here. Terrific conversation. Read those pieces, friends, on the platform here from Patricia Antone, George McClellan, Michael McCarthy. They're terrific writers. But more than that, they're thinkers. That's one thing to sit down and write a piece. That's another thing to make sense and do your research and put logic behind it, as has been done with these pieces here. Interesting conversation. Let us know your thoughts out there. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Did this conversation go too far? Did it not go far enough for you? I'm curious because it is a complicated conversation and one that most people avoid, frankly. We didn't avoid it here, though. We had it, hopefully, with some class and dignity here, friends. You can email us at liberty@americaoutloud.com. Okay, friends, it's all back at americaoutloud.news and help us share the Out Loud truth. There's some wonderful pieces up there. And there's one going up I want to point out here. You'll see on the weekend here from IQ Al Razzouli that we talked about up front of the broadcast. It's a must read and share. European and American laws can stop the spread of Islamic terrorism. This is a very important piece and needs to be shared far and wide. Also, a terrific piece from Dr. Li Mingyang. It is quite an eye-opener. Exclusive, Kim Jong-un's daughter in Beijing and Xi Jinping's Jinping plan. This is a breaking news story about his twin daughters and one that is being held hostage in Beijing. It is a must read. It's an eye-opener statement, and it is big news that's on the network here as you listen to the broadcast on Sunday. Friends, thank you for joining me on the mission here. It's time to get involved and get loud, America.